having a foundation like the Cancer Research Foundation support somebody who's just starting out like me is helpful beyond the money, because it validates one's ideas and said, hey, this is worth at least trying. And so it's really important for the psyche of a young investigator to have some external force saying, yes, this is a good idea, and try it.
From the Cancer Research Foundation, this is Fighting Cancer, a podcast interviewing researchers, innovators, and entrepreneurs who are fighting cancer through their bold ideas in science and technology. A show to discover their moment of wanting to join the fight against cancer and to hear their story. On today's show, we have Dr. Milan Chaitta, a CRF young investigator and an assistant professor in the Department of Medicine at the Washington University in St. Louis. After experiencing the effects of glioblastoma directly on the patients and the families he treated, he was on a mission to find a cure. Glioblastoma is a deadly brain tumor, which has a survival rate of 1 to 2 years after diagnosis. After his initial proposal and work targeting glioblastoma through the CRF, he and a team of scientists went on to find a way to use the Zika virus as a way to potentially find a cure for glioblastoma. Please enjoy this episode with Dr. Milan Chaitta. All right, welcome to the podcast. Milan, we're so happy that you're here. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So this will be our third episode, and we've been interviewing other investigators and researchers, and so we're really excited to kind of learn more about everything you're working on. But I guess to start, you know, we'd love to just begin where we can learn more about you, maybe your background, how you got to the work you're doing today, and then we can go from there.
Sure. I grew up outside of Buffalo, New York, and I studied physics and math in college. And after college, several years later, I decided to go to medical school. And I've always been intrigued in the brain and memory. And that led me to a residency in neurology. And it was during my residency in neurology that I had my first exposure with patients and their families of patients who have brain tumors, specifically glioblastoma. And I saw, you know, how devastating a disease it was. Mm-hmm. And it really got me interested in studying it and improving the lives of patients who have glioblastoma. So I followed up a neurology residency with a fellowship in neuro-oncology, and I joined the laboratory of Bill Hahn, at the Dana-Farber. And really, that's where I got my first foray into cancer genomics and trying to understand how the genes that drive glioblastoma do it. And in particular, right around that time, a discovery was made in the field of cancer stem cells. You know, a lifelong problem of, or I shouldn't say a lifelong problem, but a decades-old problem of glioblastoma has been that despite surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy, we are unable to kill all of the tumor cells. And in spite of all of this therapy, on average, it just takes about 6 months for a patient's tumor to come back. And most patients die within a year or two after the diagnosis. And the discovery by the Dirks Laboratory in the mid-2000s or early 2000s was that in patients' tumors, there exist these cells, a very small subpopulation of cells that are called cancer stem cells. And it turns out that those cells are resistant to the very therapies we've been trying for years in this tumor. And so this discovery was made while I was just beginning my training in the laboratory, and I dedicated myself to try to understand what makes these cancer stem cells different than the rest of the tumor cells. And that's how I started my postdoctoral fellowship, and that's what I've been following up on as I started my own laboratory 3 years ago.
Wow. And so for our listeners, and for me personally, unfortunately, I've had a family member that was diagnosed with glioblastoma and did not survive. And you're right. It's a form of tumor, correct? That it seems to be hyper aggressive, and it seems to kind of attack, the brain in such a way that, like you mentioned, the survival rate is so short. And have you seen a lot of the patients getting the same type of treatment? Because we would assume that, with so many people dying from glio, that the treatments would have been different. But it seems that no one has really found a solution to this point.
Well, there is a standard treatment when patients are first diagnosed, and this is based on the use of temozolomide or Temodar, which is a chemotherapy, and it's combined with radiation after people are first diagnosed. So that is the mainstay of our treatments. And both radiation and Temodar focus on damaging DNA. So you're right, glioblastoma is a form of cancer, it's a tumor. And what cancer is, it occurs when one cell divides and continues to divide because it thinks that all of the nutrients it needs are around, and it's uncontrolled division of cells. And in order for one cell to become two cells, it has to copy its DNA. Hmm. And once the DNA is copied, it has to be shared from that one cell into the two daughter cells. And so what radiation and temozolomide chemotherapy do is attack that copying of the DNA to insert damage into the copied DNA so that the cell will collapse. And so that's a standard therapy almost everybody gets. Hmm. However, there are a lot of clinical trials, and these clinical trials are trying different medications or additions of medications. And there's actually even a newly approved device for the treatment of glioblastoma called the Optune device, which delivers low-level electrical fields to the tumor. But for the most part, most people have some combination of radiation and chemotherapy.
Gotcha. And so the work that you're focused on specifically with the foundation is within that glio work.
Correct. What I've been doing is focusing on the subpopulation of cells that are within the tumor. So imagine thousands of cells making up a glioblastoma, and maybe tens to hundreds in this proportionate example I'm giving you have special properties that make them resistant to radiation and chemotherapy. And so I've been focusing on trying to understand what makes those cells different and how we can better target those cells. Also, through the foundation, I've been working on a specific kind of brain tumor, glioblastoma, and lower grade astrocytomas that have one particular mutation in a gene called IDH1. IDH1 is a gene that's really important for metabolism, the breakdown of sugar into energy. But it turns out that this is commonly mutated or altered in an irregular way in many kinds of brain tumors. And I'm trying to understand how we can target that subtype of tumor even better than we are now.
Wow. And so to step back a little bit, I know you mentioned that there were certain experiences that you had that really piqued your interest into the work in glioblastoma. And were you working specifically with patients during your experiences? And, was there an experience there that kind of piqued your interest to continue to do work in this field? Because it would seem like it's such an aggressive form of cancer, and being having the ability to work with patients and their families, that it would seem like it would be an opportunity to to potentially find a cure.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely remember the first patient with glioblastoma that I had. You know, I think it's a combination of things that drew me into the field. One is I typically root for the underdog. Maybe that's growing up in Buffalo, New York, and rooting for the Buffalo Bills throughout my childhood or something else. But, you know, also through my patient interactions, I really got to see families at their best coming together. And I really appreciated the care paradigm of brain tumors. That is, you get to know patients and their families over time. It's very much in that sense like a primary care physician interaction with these patients, although they all do have brain tumors. And it was also important to me that this is really a devastating disease, but also an area where science is making great strides. And I really have a lot of hope for the future, for brain tumor biological research, and more importantly, outcomes for patients with brain tumors. So it was really a combination of my emotional attachment with my patients, combined with seeing what a devastating disease, but also seeing exciting opportunities in the science of the disease. So all of those things really attracted me to this field.
And I can definitely attest to having family affected by this, is that, you know, you do look for that hope, and it's really great to know that there's research and science and, you know, and investigators like yourself that are looking at this as an opportunity to right a wrong that's very aggressive, and you know, we appreciate that. And so I know you've been working on, you know, some other projects that have really sparked some interest in the news and that we've heard about in regards to the Zika virus and how that correlates with brain tumors. And so we'd love to kind of dig into that. And we feel like that's really exciting and love to just learn more.
Sure. So, you know, I mentioned that these cancer stem cells are important players in the recurrence of the tumor. And cancer stem cells, they're not normal stem cells, but they share certain biological properties with normal neural stem cells. And, you know, our goal has been to find, target, and kill these otherwise resistant cells. And through a really rich collaboration with Mike Diamond, who's a flavivirus expert here, Jeremy Rich, who is an expert in cancer stem cell biology and glioblastoma biology, as well as Peiyong Shi, who's a virologist at the University of Texas, and really hard and excellent work by a postdoctoral fellow, Zai Zhu. We have opened up our interest in studying Zika virus as a potential therapy for glioblastoma. So what Zai started out by doing, rationalizing that cancer stem cells are similar to normal neural stem cells, and there's all of this press about the outbreak of the Zika virus epidemic because it affects the normal neural development of fetuses. He asked the question, since cancer stem cells share properties with those neural stem cells, Can Zika virus kill these cancer stem cells? I should also mention before going forward, the Zika virus outbreak really had minimal impact on adults. There were some issues in adults in Zika virus areas, but those were largely due to a post-infection immune response causing something called Guillain-Barré syndrome. But overall, suffice it to say, Zika virus and its epidemic had minimal impact on adults and adult brains. And the tumor we're working on is predominantly a tumor of adults, although there is pediatric glioblastoma as well. So just in the test tube and plates in the lab, Zai Zhu tested the virus on patient-derived cancer stem cells, and he found that it can kill these cells. But more interestingly, he found that it doesn't kill every cell. It only kills largely the cancer stem cells. It doesn't kill normal neural brain cells. And through a series of studies, we found that when you have tumor models, brain tumors in mice, and you treat those mice with Zika virus, they live 2 to 3 times longer compared to mice not treated with the virus, treated with a control. And not only that, the mice were not getting sick from the virus itself. They were doing much, much better and living much longer. And it was really intriguing because they live much longer than you would expect if it were purely just the Zika virus finding and killing these stem-like cells. And further work driven by Arajitha Josh, who's a postdoctoral fellow in the lab, and Jen Gavero, who's in Mike Diamond's lab, as well as collaborators Jeremy Rich and Pei Yong Shi, we further found that that the virus is triggering an immunological response so that the normal immune system is finding the rest of the tumor and attacking it. So we're really excited about this because not only have we seen that the Zika virus treatment is specific for the cancer stem cells and not affecting normal brain, we're also finding that it triggers and jumpstarts the immune system's response to the tumor.
I would imagine that, you know, for me as a non-scientific person, you know, how does the team come together to even recognize that potentially a virus that was dangerous in one area could be an opportunity in another area? You know, it just seems, you know, has this been tried before, done before? It seems that perhaps it would be a possibility, but it seems like a very exciting approach to taking a look at potential cures.
Yeah, so Zika virus is a member of a family of viruses called flaviviruses. One other flavivirus is called West Nile virus. And long ago, researchers have tried to use West Nile virus to target cancers. However, that virus didn't have the specificity that Zika virus does. And so it caused mass destruction and causes a lot of problems. And so that wasn't a good therapeutic option. And that's why in our earlier studies, we compared Zika virus's specificity with West Nile virus's specificity in our models.
Wow.
But in addition to that, this is not a new idea to use viruses to target cancer. And in particular, poliovirus is an exciting area of research to target brain tumors. There have been adenoviruses that have been genetically engineered to work against glioblastoma. Others have used herpes viruses or engineered herpes viruses. So there is a long history of trying to leverage something really negative to do something positive.
Wow. Wow. That's great. And I would imagine with sort of the news of this study that many people that are affected by glio would be very interested in this treatment when it comes to fruition. And so how far along is the team in this sort of proposal and idea? And, you know, if people can even expect this to be, you know, in the market as a solution in the near future?
I think we're about a year and a half before trying it in patients. And that's with a lot of things happening and going our way. We have a lot of positive data suggesting we're heading that way. But we've done so far is generate what's called an immune sensitized version of the virus. So even though during the health epidemic, Zika virus didn't cause significant or numerous problems in adults, we still feel it's important not to put in the natural strain of the virus into human brains.
Right.
So what Peiyong Shi and Mike Diamond's labs have generated are different forms of the virus, which are changed genetically. And this makes it very unlikely that the virus can go back to being the usual, what we call wild type form of the virus. And we've tested these different immune sensitized strains, we call them, and several of these remain very effective in the laboratory. And we're moving into our animal models now to make sure that they remain efficacious. We've also been looking at how the immune system gets revved up exactly by treatment with the virus, and we're trying to leverage that as well. I imagine that we would have to show further safety before bringing our data to the FDA and asking for the ability to try this in patients in clinical trials. These next steps take a lot of money and personnel. And right now we're working on trying to get the necessary funds to really jumpstart this and move this forward so that we can bring it into patients. You know, a great scenario would be within a year and a half.
Wow, that's amazing. And I think that's a great point too. I think part of the podcast, right? Part of our hope is to also educate myself and not just donors, but just the general public around what it really takes to start research, what it takes to build a team and to try to execute on these big, bold ideas that you guys have. And I think part of it is the funding piece. And on that note, you know, what has, you know, for example, a grant like the grant you received from the CRF, how has that helped you in kind of your career? How has that motivated you or kind of help accelerate things for you? Because we really believe that investigators need essentially seed money to get started. And if you can talk a little bit about what that the funding has kind of helped you do.
Yeah, I think there's a few things. First and foremost, having a foundation like the Cancer Research Foundation support somebody who's just starting out like me is helpful beyond the money, because it validates one's ideas and said, hey, this is worth at least trying. And so it's really important for the psyche of a young investigator to have some external force saying, yes, this is a good idea, and try it. And then in terms of the monetary aspect of the award, it really frees up the ability for early career scientists like myself to just try something that's on the riskier side. To just have some money to hire someone. And that's a really big hurdle. Starting a lab is to be able to fund people and buy reagents and not have the outcomes of the study be known already. You know, this is not what I was originally funded for by the Cancer Research Foundation was not something that was a low risk project. It was basically an investment in the investigator to just pursue ideas. And also you had referenced this a couple of times before, and I really do agree on the importance of having a collaborative team. And with Mike Diamond, Jeremy Rich, Peiyong Shi, all of these guys and ourselves, we all bring something different to the same question. Mm-hmm. And it's been fantastic to work with these experts in the field who are very generous with their time, ideas, and credit. And it's been a fantastic opportunity for me to have, you know, the seed funding from places like the Cancer Research Foundation to pursue these ideas and leverage other collaborative efforts.
Yeah, that's great. And that's what we're most excited about, is to really invest in not just the ideas, but the investigators and your ideas and proposals and prospective cures. The way you approach them may change, but we really believe in betting on those trying to execute those ideas. And so we're very excited about that. And, you know, one of the questions that we, at least myself, wanted to ask is, you mentioned earlier being really excited about the work being done in cancer research. And, but for the general public too, the research seems kind of far away for us. And the part of the podcast too is to help hopefully kind of bridge that gap a little bit and kind of talk to investigators and get their take on, where's the hope for us? And so what are some of the exciting things that you're seeing, maybe not just, with your own proposals, but in research so that, we can have that sort of hope that, someday there will be a cure, we're getting closer to better treatments, and other forms of solutions. And so what's been exciting to you being right in the ring?
Well, yeah, I think that brings up, I'll address the second point you asked in the question in a few moments, but I do think that it's important for the public to understand this because largely research is driven by government funding, National Institutes of Health, and it's really important for the people who are funding it, that is the public, to understand what they're funding. I do want to make a point that really fundamental research that has led to new treatments starts out in very basic laboratories. For example, classic experiments in yeast or in Drosophila, fruit fly, have really led to our understanding of genes and what they do and how things go wrong in cancer. And, I'm really excited about immunotherapies. This was one of the Nobel Prizes was given out for the research, the fundamental research that formed the backdrop of what we now have today as immunotherapies for cancers. Think how Jimmy Carter and his brain metastases of melanoma or brain metastasis of melanoma really was melted away by immunotherapy. So I'm excited about immunotherapies in cancer overall. They haven't been that successful yet in brain tumors, but I think that we're learning more and trying to understand how to make them work in brain tumors. So I think it's a really exciting field, but this is a field that has had successes and failures dating back decades. So sometimes when you're in the public, and you see things that may be hopeful and then see them not succeed, it's disheartening. And you wonder what all this research money is going toward. It's a long march forward in cancer research. So in addition to immunotherapies, I was excited about targeted therapies for brain tumors, going back the last 10 to 15 years. Targeted therapies are therapies where we know a particular protein has gone awry in a cancer. And now we have a drug that doesn't just completely obliterate the DNA in all dividing cells, like temozolomide, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, but we have therapies that specifically target a particular protein that's gone awry. And I think there's really exciting results in particular kinds of brain tumors using these targeted therapies. So in glioblastoma, it hasn't been successful yet, but in other brain tumors, these types of targeted therapies have been remarkable. So I'm excited about those. I'm excited about this device called the Optune device, which delivers low-level electrical fields. It sounds crazy, but there was a phase 3 trial. That's the best kind of evidence we have in treatment, in studying treatments. And this trial was reported in the literature last year, showing that when people wear this device, it can prolonged survival on average. So it's really an interesting aspect of cancer therapy. So here I've just spoken about immunotherapies. I've spoken about targeted therapies. I've spoken about this device. There's a lot of different parallel tracks that people are exploring to improve outcomes for cancer.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, it's you know, part of our mission is to kind of educate and also you know, gain knowledge around what's out there and the work that you guys are doing. And we appreciate all the transparency and candor about it. And so, you know, aside from, you know, our website, you know, we'll be sure to link to other places where people can learn more about you. Is there specific places where people can go to kind of learn more about you and your lab or some of the articles that we may have mentioned today?
Yeah, well, if you Google my last name, Cheda, C2HEDA, and then the letters ICCE, you can get my laboratory's website. The ICCE is an institute at Washington University that I'm a part of. And we have a video up there and some more information about what we're doing. I think in terms of patient advocacy and great work being done for educating families, the American Brain Tumor Association is a great, great site.
Oh, great. Yeah, we'll be sure to link to that in the show notes. And yeah, we when your proposal came across the desk and knowing that I had, you know, some personal connection with glioblastoma, it was really exciting to kind of read about the proposal and the things that you're working on and just to see tremendous progress in the work that you're doing outside of this foundation, particularly with the Zika virus and the team that you mentioned. It's been really exciting to see that come to fruition in such a short amount of time. And I'm hoping to get you back on the podcast to get an update when appropriate. But we feel like a lot of what you're working on is giving a lot of patients and families a lot of hope. So we want to thank you for that.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And I'm happy to receive emails from people if they have specific questions about this work. My email address, I guess you can put up there as well, but it's mcheda, M-C-2-H-E-D-A at Wustl, W-U-S-T-L.edu. And we would always appreciate funding to move our work forward more quickly in patients. So we would be appreciative of any funding that could come our way. So that would be great.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, thanks so much for accepting emails and communication. And we'll be sure to link all this up in the show notes. So, hey, this has been great. This has been really great to kind of talk and to learn more about the proposal, but especially about yourself. And we hope to do a follow-up episode real soon.
Okay, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed this episode with Dr. Milind Cheda. We are excited to bring you a lot more. If you want to learn more about the Cancer Research Foundation, go to cancerresearchfdn.org. That's cancerresearchfdn.org.